This is a forum that is going to be related to the struggle, the top of the problem, whatever it may be called, about our public education today, related to a question about competence of teachers, at least in part of it, and a couple of reasons for it coming up, in case you haven't already figured that out yourself. First of all, some of us believe public education is a very important part of our society. We generally just want to be concerned about it. Secondly, we heard that, at least I was told, that like 3/4 of the people in the village are teachers. maybe that was a request. We also heard there were some parents in the village.
I hope
stuck
so.
In, one way or the other. And that they might be interested. And also there was some response to, at least some of you, and indeed myself, this art, a special issue of Time Magazine, which dealt with on public education and has the front cover, Help Teachers Can't Teach. So that was another kind of a thing to stir up the cause of trying to pull some folks together to talk about it. For those of you who haven't participated, perhaps in a forum, let me explain the way it works here at the village, and we can change it as it goes and all that, but this is the way we usually work it, is that we just open up some discussion and go with what is being said. If something is of interest, we'll stay with that for a period of time and try to get through it, but it can go in a number of directions. Everyone is welcome to present. No one is here as a specialist to make an official presentation, so you are the specialist at this time, and your concerns, your questions, your ideas are part of it. I'll serve as moderator and try to keep one person from doing 17 speeches in a row. I also promise you that I will watch the time and we'll commit about 2 minutes to 10 to draw to a close, and you'll be on your way by 10 o'clock. And others, if you want to stay beyond that, others can stay and just chat well after this, so we'll hold to that time. How many of you have, first of all, how many of you, may I ask, are teachers in the public schools? May I ask in the same, also, how many of you here, are there parents here who are not teachers? Are there parents here who are not teachers? A few. Okay. I hope the discussion doesn't get lopsided. how many of you have read this article in Time? Some. Would you mind if I just read their 3 lead paragraphs and maybe that'll stimulate some people to respond? I'll just turn it over to you, asking for your response. It doesn't have to be to this, it can be what you're carrying in the room. As my partner to the right here said, want some first-hand experience, and maybe be able to share with us too. Here's the opening paragraphs. Like some vast jury, gradually and reluctantly arriving at a verdict, politicians, educators, and especially millions of parents have come to believe that the U.S. public schools are in perilous, parlous trouble. I didn't know the word. P-A-R-L-O-U-S. You know? There we are.
Teachers.
But you write that on a board. Violence keeps making headlines. Test scores keep dropping. Debate rages over whether or not 1/5 or more adult Americans are functionally illiterate. High school graduates go so far as to sue their school systems because they got respectable grades and a diploma but cannot fill a job application form correctly. Experts confirm that students today may get at least 25% more A's and B's than they did 15 years ago, and no less. A government-funded nationwide survey group, National Assessment of Educational Progress, reports that in science, writing, social studies, and mathematics, the achievement of U.S. 17-year-olds has dropped regularly over the past decade. That's paragraph one. Paragraph two. Rounding up the usual suspects in the learning crisis is easy enough. Decline of the family that once instilled respect for authority in learning, influence of television on student attention span, disruption of schools created by busing, and the national policy of keeping more students in school longer, regardless of aptitude, the conflicting demands upon the public school system, which is now expected not only to teach, but to make up for past and present racial and economic injustice. And a paragraph two. Paragraph two. But increasingly, too, parents have begun to blame the shortcomings of the schools on the lone and very visible figure at the front of the classroom. Teachers for decades have been admired for selfless devotion. More recently, as things went wrong. They were pitied as overworked martyrs to be overburdened into an overburdened school system. Now bewildered and beleaguered, teachers are being blamed, rightly or wrongly, for much of the trouble in the classroom. And it goes on from there. Some paragraphs dealing with what they would assume to be an evaluation of the competence of teachers as teachers in teaching. Some response or direction.
I had a topic all mixed up.
Oh, good.
I thought it was teaching competence or teaching incompetence. And I just wondered if the two aren't related. Someone said, and I never thought of it until this point, that everything else in America is related to the best. It's the best car manufacturer that makes the profits. But teaching is always, or is tendedly to be geared to the least. You know, keep everybody together, which means slowing down some of the, you know, the kids that are more advanced or more talented. And I wonder if that's tied together.
Certainly relates. Want to say more? Take a stand, or?
Well, as a father of an 8-year-old or 8-month-old daughter, you know.
on the basis of your experience. Then.
Yeah, right. You know. I guess I'm concerned about her. You know. If she's average and intelligent, or she's above average or less than average, you know, what is she going to be taught in terms of being a competent and person? If she's under average, is she going to just be left behind, or if she's gifted, what's going to happen? Or is she going to be melted into whatever?
Yes, please.
I see immediately, I guess, two main problems with our whole education system. First, I think the philosophy of education is still too much the idea of seeing students as containers to fill, where the teacher fills with knowledge, whether that's factual or, you know, we're getting a little bit away from that, but not enough. I don't think there's enough looking at education as a dialogue between teachers and students, where they're mutually looking at giving resources, and where there's an equal value in both their opinions. I think that's the one thing. I'd like to see that emphasis change. The other thing is, I don't think the school systems are aware of the changing needs of the students, particularly in inner city areas or where you have a mixed group. It's not something that the teachers can handle alone. There's not enough working together with the community, with social workers, to meet these other problems. A lot of teachers that I know just never had the opportunity in their education to get enough background in child abuse and things like that. Maybe they shouldn't have to, but there ought to be some kind of connection there, so we're dealing with all those other problems in the school system, but also with the community outside.
One of my problems, as I think about this topic and as I look at what has happened in the state of Minnesota in education, is the expectation that teachers will be able to do all of those things, some of which you just cited, that they will be knowledgeable of child abuse. I look at the three statutes which have been put in the last year that teachers will be able to impart some sort of knowledge about alcohol abuse and drug abuse, that they will be able to include in their teaching some aspects of health, good health education. And there's a third one that they just human relations. And we had all of the problem in human relations in the most recent current interest in human relations in the late 60s, early 70s. Then we had to make our teachers human relations experts. Every time we keep adding some new dilemma to be solved, I'm sensitive to what you're saying, but every time we keep adding a new dilemma, we move the teacher farther and farther from that topic for which he or she has been hired to teach in the first place. So I have a hard time with all of that the teacher somewhere has to reflect and be knowledgeable of and deal with all of the ills in society.
That's where I think it has to be. We have to start seeing more as a team job, more than just the teacher, but along with other professions. Because although those are things that, you know, we can say those should happen in the home, the fact is in a lot of homes they don't. And those students aren't going to learn if they're not having these other things also.
OK. Okay, back, please. I assume we're on this yet.
I think if we get back to having only 20 children in the classroom, then the teacher can get to know each child well enough so she can understand what the problems are in that child's life.
Unfortunately, most school districts are battling, most teacher groups are battling with their school boards and their constituencies made up of the public because funding does not permit smaller classrooms. We had a contract this year where our district almost went on strike because we could not reduce our class size. We have anywhere from 30 to 40 students in a class. I'm not a regular classroom teacher, but I empathize with them in that respect. It's up to the parents to push for smaller class size because that's when you're going to get the quality education.
In back, over there.
Elmer, did I hear you say that the Time magazine, quoting that, that the Time magazine would suggest that teachers at one time were highly respected in this country and now are not? Because I would like to bring that into question. I don't think that teachers have ever been respected in this country. And I think that that what we say and how we've treated them show two different messages.
Before we get on to that, I'd like to say something.
Admired.
Admired.
I don't know if there's a difference or not, but that's the word. Somebody.
What the man was saying from Minnesota, it seems, I agree that we need smaller classes, but to define what it is a school is to do, you know, it just seems like schools are becoming responsible for everything except maybe religious education, but, you know, what is the parent's role, what is the school's role, what is the church's role, that kind of thing. I just think that schools are being expected to do too much in too little bit of a time.
I thought what it said.
Go ahead.
Just a short little comment here. I thought what it said in the article there about schools are now expected to do what God was used to be expected to do. You know, that kind of sums it up in with what Melody said.
I just like to, I'm from Minnesota, I'm going to be a teacher in less than a year's time, but I'd like to add too that for what the teacher has to put up with in the classroom, they're not getting paid enough.
What's enough?
We are losing many of our best teachers right in our hometown because they can go out into business, into a corporation, and get twice what they're getting to put up with what they're coming up with in the classroom.
If you look at all of the professions that deal in the service, social workers, counselors, ministers, teachers, in relation to the pay scale of people that do not have a job that requires higher education, we are certainly underpaid. Mm-hmm.
And I feel that in our country where we put a monetary value on a person, a teacher is not going to be respected until he gets a higher salary, he or she gets a higher salary.
I don't think the teacher will be respected until he has an education that's worth the higher salary.
What do you mean by
that? Are you saying then the teacher does not have a good education?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's right. And I don't feel that.
Whose fault is that?
The
well,
fault of the myth that you can teach a person to teach.
Whoa.
I don't know where that's coming from, but maybe this is not.
Let him say more, and then you can respond. Is that right?
Okay. What I thought this might mean is what I thought was my experience, which was that I thought, at least as a secondary teacher, that the teacher education program I went through was terrible, just absolutely abysmal. You know, the subject area thing was fine, but then you know you go into your education classes, and they were so absolutely horrible that if I had to go back and talk to them now, I would have to try not to physically abuse them. Because they just sent me out there, and within weeks I was just going, no, you know, I have to start over. It's too late. And that's true.
Mm-hmm. You want to say more?
There are a lot of us who have a lot of bad years because we're making it up on the spur of the moment. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that at the time?
I don't know. You know, I student taught when I was a senior, you know, and I had most of this stuff done by then and things. And, you know, they gave me some theories, but, you know, and then I had this grade book and I had to organize it and I had to make all that stuff up.
I had the opposite experience. I had a wonderful teacher education program at my college.
Where was it?
In the classroom. Where in Minnesota? Red Wing.
What school?
High school.
What college did you go to?
University of Wisconsin at River Falls.
River Falls?
Back there, please, go ahead.
Excuse me, I forgot your name. I spoke to you. The woman. So you're taking those courses right now, isn't that correct?
No, I've already had them. I'm all finished.
But you took them recently.
Last year.
Yeah, okay. And I believe that's a difference, the age at which you take the courses.
Yeah, I'm older. That's true.
Yeah, and I finished the end. I think that's the difference.
Is that clear to everybody what the difference is?
No.
I believe she took the courses, I think, in taking the education courses as a 19 and 20-year-old is different than, and sort of fumbling around, I think I want to be a teacher, maybe I'll do this, I'll try it, is different than deciding at age 29 that I'm going to be a teacher and I'm going to go get those education courses now, and perhaps being more of what we want our students to be, and that is a challenging student.
Are you suggesting that it's sort of inevitable if we're going to take it that way, or are you suggesting we're going to be changing?
No, I'm not saying it's inevitable.
Okay. But anyway, because most are coming through at that time, aren't they? I mean, is that correct? At the 18, 19-year-old level?
No, I'm not saying it's inevitable at all.
Okay. Well, then, please.
Perhaps what we need to do is get the teacher educating institutions to create courses that will help the largest age group. You're saying that the education courses now are best for people who have really decided for sure that they want to do that. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. All I'm saying is that it makes a big difference if you have decided that you really want something and you're going to go get it. She was making the point that I think the education courses are fine today, or that my experience was a good one. And I think that it has to be a factor in that is your desire at the time, or your attitude at the time of taking the courses.
Yeah. What the reason that I asked and everything was that I think that it would be a good idea to start people who think they're interested in education into exploring it a lot earlier than they do, because very often you are an education major and you have, you know, 90% of your credits toward that major, and then you begin to be teaching and you find out you hate it and you have not the time or money, you know, to do something else. And so there you are being a teacher and you don't want to.
Is this a sort of a way of saying that the time's right? We just got bad teachers?
Would you say that
again? Is what this discussion going on sort of saying, agreeing with time that the problem is we have bad teachers?
No.
I'm trying to understand what this conversation is saying. I mean, I think it is saying something. I'm not trying to lay it on, but one deduction that I seem to make from that is, yeah, we got bad courses, or it makes a difference in when we pick, or we got a lot of people who are getting trapped. And that seems to say, well, maybe time isn't so far off. Maybe we got a bunch of bad teachers, and maybe that's one of the problems. Is that an accurate reading of what you're saying, or is it something different?
I think people are frustrated. I know as a student I was frustrated by not being prepared for what I was thrown into. However, I'm in a special ed program, I'm a speech pathologist, and so I wasn't in the normal education process. And I was able to get in as a sophomore into a school setting, decide if that's what I wanted, and had clinical practicum as you do as a graduate student throughout my undergraduate years, and then also had graduate programming. But, you know, I think possibly all the LA people that I was friends with didn't
have anything and were frustrated because they just were thrown in as a senior, and I guess that's what I hear people saying.
In back, Karen.
May I give my testimony?
Yes.
This could take a while, I wonder. I'm a university professor at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. Yes, you better move back. I teach an art education. We have a course for sophomores where they do have actual teaching experience. They learn a lot about writing curriculum. They learn that teaching is extremely hard work. To give you some sort of an idea about what they think about me and my reputation on campus and in the department, I pulled up to the loading dock behind the art building, and there was an ex-student and another student. And the ex-student said, hello, Corinne, and I said, hello, and the other student turned white as a sheet, stepped back and said, oh, are you Corinne? I said, yes, are you in art education? And the student said, yes, I will be in your class in the fall. And I said, well, then you'd better start eating your chopped liver and getting ready for it. I don't mince words with my students. I treat them as professionals. And at that point, many of them do wash out of the program. And that's very good, because they're not cut out to be teachers. But I think that students need to be told the truth. They need to have plenty of experience as soon as possible in their program. And they need to be approached with some honesty and be shown as much as possible the real world. That's it for a while, if you have more questions.
Okay. Right here, Charlie.
I think that's a really unusual situation. I'm in the California teaching system, so it's like really different. And I knew what the education classes were going to be, and I avoided them till the last minute because they were really bad in a lot of places. I suppose there are some places where they're very good, but I really think that that's an exception. I went into teaching by teaching in a private school, which I don't say that it's the right way, but I learned to teach by teaching. And I just, jumped in with both feet. But I think that they need to change these education classes and get something more realistic. That would be a good start.
Who's the they?
Whoever decides all these things in the colleges, because they don't ask the students. The students have made a lot of suggestions and a lot of recommendations in our system. They file it in their little filing basket, and that's as far as it goes. It just continues on and on.
Carol?
I also am an ex-Los Angeles city school teacher. California is one of the few states in the nation that requires a fifth year for a credential. And so some of the things that people are saying here are automatically taken care of by the fact that as an undergraduate, you're given opportunity. As a matter of fact, it's now a requirement that you, in most education systems, that you go and observe and be involved in classroom situations before you've gone on student teaching situations. So it seems to me that from the standpoint of just saying, well, to hash over each of our systems and say, well, I had a good system or I didn't have a good system, for teacher training, that does not explain the problem that we're in right now. I watched a McNeil-Lehrer report about 3 weeks ago, maybe four now, in which the problem of teacher burnout was the major issue of the program. I don't know how many of you saw that. A most amazing program because none of the teachers on that program had taught like 1 or 2 years, but most of them who spoke had at least 10 years of experience. And what they were saying is, this is a whole different bag we're in, that teacher burnout is not a matter of just patching up little problems with teacher education or talking about the merits or lack of merits of our particular institution of training, but that the societal problem of education is in much deeper trouble. And then after we've had heard all these teachers speak about this dreadful problem of teacher burnout, they had some guy from a teacher education campus someplace say, in effect, that he thought the problem was simply a matter of that these teachers had not had a course in time management. You know, I mean, it's a simplistic answer to that. And the teacher's jaws, I mean, I thought maybe we'd have a murder on the people over there. You know, I think it's a much deeper problem. Teacher burnout was rampant in my high school. I quit, and people, and after 17 years, teachers that I knew who were in their 60s looking for retirement in a matter of 2 or 5 years, depending on how much money they'd banked already, you know, were simply quitting like that and saying, I can't stand it anymore. Something different is happening.
Please, Ben.
I happened to start teaching in 1969. I came out of the high school system, which was very traditional. And I went to a good church college with a typical lousy education program and started teaching in the fall of 69. And I noticed, and looking back, I could see this more clearly, that what I came out of was in the process of passing on, where you had students who were obedient in the main, had parents who were supportive, at least to some extent. If the kid was in trouble at school, he was in trouble at home. And I saw this change in the last 11 years that I've been teaching, and it changed within the first 2 or 3. Fortunately, I had no habits ingrained as far as the way I taught, and eventually changed my system to adapt to the kids I was trying to teach. Even so, after teaching 11 years in a Midwestern town, highly industrialized, where the emphasis is definitely on getting a job, getting work so you can buy things, and that's the key emphasis, I'm tired and I'm looking to leave in the next year or two. That's probably all I'm going to stand. I feel unsupported by the community entirely. I feel unsupported by my administration, almost to a man, and have felt that way for a number of years. I am tired of being told that I only work 9 months and why don't I get a decent job. I'm tired of being laughed at by the man who works in the tractor works because he got a 9% raise plus cost of living figured quarterly because he has a better health plan than I will ever have as a teacher. I'm basically tired of living without moral and economic and emotional support of the parents, of the not students, of the children that I'm supposed to be teaching. I was told once by one of the good education teachers I had in graduate school that if you reach one kid a year, you're doing a good job. By that standard, I've been doing a fantastic job because over the years I've reached many more than one kid, and I know this. I am satisfied that I am a good teacher with most kids, with most things, if I have a class that is fairly small. In my system, fairly small is 25. And if I'm left alone, so I can do it. Most of these things are not happening. A friend with whom I teach is equally willing to leave simply because we see that in our system, things are not getting better. They will not get better. They will get worse. And we're tired of being the valiant few, and there are more than two of us, trying to hold things together. I am also decided I dearly love to teach. I do not like to teach where I am, and if necessary, I am getting a mindset where I will be willing to leave teaching.
Please.
Educate me a little bit. I'm hearing from teachers, why do you want to teach in the first place?
Okay. Well, right over here, there's a couple.
I guess I wanted to throw a question on everybody.
Well, let's see if there's any response to that first. Okay. Anyone?
I have two of my reasons that I love to teach because I feel the children are important and because what I'm teaching I feel is important. And it's very difficult to do that when you're fighting against what Art talked about. And also the fact, you know, all these outside changes that were not, say, characteristic 10, 15 years ago. The increased influence of television in the homes. We had a speaker at our district once who said, children spend their largest percentage of time sleeping, and their second largest percentage of time watching television, and their third largest percentage in school. And I'm not blaming it all on television because it is a useful medium. But that and other forces that, and I'm not saying either that it's just the, those forces that are contributing to the deterioration of the teaching and the schools and the cooperation within the community. But so many forces are prevalent now that were not so then. And it's those things that are making it more and more difficult for teachers to enjoy their profession.
Yeah, please. You were going
to ask. I wanted to toss a question. I don't know how many parents are here, single-age children, but I was hitting on the point that you didn't feel support from the parents. And I was just curious to the parents, how comfortable do the schools make you feel? How valuable do you find those parent-teacher conferences? If there are parents here who would like to respond to that.
Well, I'm a parent who is not an education major by any means and could only remember my own education and the respect my parents had for the teachers and that I had for the teachers. And then when we went into school the first time, my son was in an open concept school, which is a little bit different, and I was scared of it because it was something that I wasn't sure of. It wasn't a good situation for him, and we'd go to parent-teacher conferences and ask how our child was doing, and they'd say, oh, he's doing just fine, he gets along well with the children, but how's he doing in math? I was in fourth grade, they found out it was below average, and it was almost like the teacher was afraid to tell us that it was going to reflect on her abilities. And all I wanted was help for my child, and now he's in seventh grade, going into eighth now, and he's had a terrible year, because way back, the child, they were so concerned in that school in second grade how he felt about himself, but they didn't care if he learned how to do whatever it is he was supposed to. And I never have felt comfortable with parent-teacher conferences because I don't understand the teacher jargon that they use. And if you get on a first-name basis with them and you help in the classroom, which they let you do in an open concept, and you watch them teach, and there's a lot of parent participation in that kind of a school, you finally get through all that, and you finally have some kind of a rapport with the teacher, and they're willing to work with you and you with them. I think I went into educating my children thinking that these teachers knew more than I did about my child, and I came out of there after 6 years with him thinking not that I knew more than the teachers, and I never pretended to feel that way, but I wanted my kids to have a chance. It seemed like they almost stereotyped him and, you know, kind of passed him along without really caring about him. And we couldn't seem to talk about it because they were using teacher language and I was using parent language, and it never seemed to overlap at all. And I felt very frustrated about that as a parent who didn't have an education background at all. That's a problem too, but I feel that I've supported my children's teachers, or at least tried to, and I'd like to know how we can support teachers, because that's, we're kind of at your disposal or your grace or whatever when it comes to educating.
But that attitude is not typical.
Typical.
No, unfortunately. I wish it was.
What's typical?
Apathy.
Yeah. School is a babysitter.
It depends. I mean, there's a lot of variety. But there's a lot of parents who are so busy with working full-time or, I don't know, whatever it may be, maybe just self-fulfillment or something, that do not, you know, give the children the time that you apparently have been giving your child, you know, and really care to dig into the school system and see, you know, what
back
can
here
be done.
Now. Please.
I was just going to say that I think that there are parents that are real busy. I work with kids in high school who are really disabled and behavior problems, and I think our parents and those kids probably have more problems than the average kid in high school, and I think that there isn't a one of them who would say that they are not concerned about their kids. And I think parents in general, you know, would say that they really do care about their children and what happens to them. And I think a lot of times there's other things that get in the way, like alcoholism or, you know, jobs and a lot of stuff like that. But I think, you know, they are willing to listen for the most part. And sometimes they can't follow through, you know, as well as they'd like to or as well as you'd like them to. You know, and certainly they can't spend, or they don't spend as much time as would be real nice to have them do.
I would like to say two things. From my experience, which isn't a whole lot as a teacher, I would go so far as to say that schools systematically alienate parents to protect themselves and cover incompetence. The second thing I would say is I have yet to meet a parent who does not care about their child. And my experience has been working on an Indian reservation where I am a white person, which is not exactly a plus to begin with, where almost 70% of the parents of my children are severe alcoholics, and I have yet to find a parent who did not care about his child and who did not want his child to do well in school.
And I think that might reflect on the Indian culture, because I think I have parents, I won't say they don't care. You know, I think you have to be a pretty strange creature to not care about your kid. I wouldn't say that about anybody, I guess. But there are certainly people who are so busy with things that they put off thinking about that kid for weeks or months at a time. And I'm speaking from a private school where people are paying money to get that kid in. And yet there are large sections of those people who won't take one night for open house, you know, they won't.
Okay.
You call them and can't get a hold of them.
Please.
I'm speaking from limited experience too, but I want to respond to this man's question about what was your question about how much involvement do parents have? Or to what extent is community apathy apparent? I taught 150 kids in the senior high school, and at our parent-teacher conference, 8 parents showed up. And we had an entire school open. We had this big show planned to give them the concept of our school, and the school was so empty that we ended up, all the teachers gathered to greet whoever came in. It was so pathetic. And talking about parents not caring, I wish I could believe what Jim was saying right here about parents really caring for the students. I had one student who committed suicide, another who was in prison for 4 weeks before his parents even called to get him out. And my interaction with parents was so bad. And I called, I made efforts to meet them after school, to go to their homes, and I had just miserable responses. So I'm sure it depends on what community you're involved in, but mine was just terrible.
Roger, I think you should say you're in a suburb of Minneapolis too, so they don't think
it's
you're
been
in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I was going to ask you about Lutheran school, but I think I should.
Is it? Where
are you? Well,
at PTA meetings, our attendance is very poor. But if you have anything involving the kids, any kind of program, or open house, or some kind of parent time, or morning coffee for parents at 8 o'clock in the morning, attendance is at 90% of parents are there.
I hear such, can I tell you what I'm hearing? I get the feeling that almost everything is negative, and it doesn't seem there's any hope. But I'm wondering, are you saying that this problem, whatever it is, and it's obviously diverse and complicated, is more of the same, or are you eventually beginning to say what Carol was suggesting before, that there is an essentially different problem in public school, in public education today? Is that what you're saying? Is it really so different, so desperate, if that's what it is, and I guess I detect at least some desperate, and maybe I'm just reading that into it, that there's something drastically wrong. And I mean, that if all the school boards shape up and all the parents shape up and everything else shape up, it's still not going to work. And that's a feeling I get from you. And what I'm confused about is whether you're just, doing a G isn't a terrible kind of thing because we have the chance to do it, or are you really saying, time's right. Public education is really in bad shape. It probably won't last very long. There are people who are saying that, you know. Very serious people who are saying it will not last very long. I don't know if you hear that. It's being said. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting on the radio the other night. It was an open thing where you call in, and they had that song in there. song or whatever. But anyway.
Hole in a wall.
A young girl called in who had only been out of high school, I think, a year or two. And I thought it was so interesting because she called in and she was saying how it was so different in high school now than when she was there just 2 or 3 years ago. And I was thinking, I have thought that many times when I graduated from high school years and years ago. Boy, is it different, say, 5 years ago. And, you heard this, what you're saying. And we have children now in elementary school, and we had them in the public school system, and we tried to support the public school system, and we tried to work with the teachers. And it seemed like it wasn't the teachers so much as nobody supported that school. And it was a crossover school. We're from the South, and we thought just the South were having monumental problems, but it was a crossover school.
and the support just was not there from the main office, from central office. And like you say, teachers were telling us, get your kids out of public school. Get them, just get them out now while you can. And just about 5 of them retired last year, and the teachers said, you know, the rest of them are retiring as soon as they could. And one of the main things that kept coming back was no support. Mm-hmm. No support. I mean, I don't know,
Thank you. Yes.
And can it be done? I think it can. Or why, in testimony, why did my, I have a good feeling about my public education, my elementary school days. What's the difference? Why was it working then? Why did we let slip? I taught a year in a public school, and I taught this last year in an inner city Catholic school. And there were some basic differences. One was the inner city Catholic school was extremely strict. We had a leader of a principal around whom the teachers rallied, and we had a mixture of lay teachers and nuns, most of whom were very dedicated people. And those students that I had this last year who were more difficult students to teach than I had before in the public schools learned a lot more.
Corinne.
There was a question that got lost back here a while ago.
Go ahead.
From a parent, and that was, how can we support our teachers? And of course, since many of us here are educators, we know about public relations, and we want to make sure we answer that question as promptly as possible. So my advice would be to accentuate the positive when there is a good educator in a school. Write not first to them, but write to their superior, principal, superintendent, or whoever. Then if you have a chance, write to them and tell them that they're doing a good job. But that's the way you can accentuate the positive, save the good teachers, and maybe call off the bad.
Please.
I'm a teacher in a private Christian school, and to go along with what you were just saying of support for the teachers, one of the policies, the first policies we and main policy that we get across to the parents is that in order for us to be successful in teaching your child, we require you when a child comes home from school saying such and such happened to me, you know, the teacher was mean and gave me an F and I didn't deserve it, etc., then we ask them to first of all give the teacher and the school the benefit of the doubt. If it is something you want to pursue, you need to talk with the teacher or whoever is involved first. But give them the benefit of the doubt before you would believe a student, because oftentimes the student has a very emotionally biased opinion of what went on and don't always tell the full truth or a slanted truth. Students come to school with stories about their parents, and I'm sure that they're not all true either. And you need to support and believe in the parents until you have ample proof to do otherwise. I have found in my experience that the parents who support the school before, when their child comes home with something, they go to the school and find out what happened. Those parents are much more supportive of the school. The student learns to also support the school and respect the teacher. It goes the other way with the parents who do not support the school and believe everything their child has and their child can do and say no wrong. That student, basically, I don't care how intelligent they are, will not achieve what they can by far and what they should oftentimes to keep up with the rest of the student population.
And when the teacher is wrong, the teachers do correct, respond to the parents that way too? I mean, assume that there's sometimes when the teacher is wrong.
Yeah, that is something though that should be handled between the parent and teacher.
Right, that's what I mean, if that happens, that the teacher will correct in behalf of the parent the thing that's wrong. Okay, over there please.
To go back to your statement about if the public schools are failing or not, are going to
disintegrate. I'm asking.
At least in D.C., about 60% of the high school students are in private schools. And this is you know, even the poorest of the poor try to do double jobs. The kids work anything to pay that tuition to get into the schools rather than go through the public schools.
Is that the answer?
I don't know.
I wonder if the private schools are any different than the public.
Right there. Please.
I teach in both public and private. It's a shared thing. In the state of Minnesota, I have grades 1 through 6 at a Catholic elementary, and then I've got choirs in the high school. And I have found many times that the parents of the Catholic elementary kids are less supportive of the teachers than I have found in the high school. They pay tuition to get their kids here. Last spring, we had to take some disciplinary action because we had a program coming up, and I wasn't getting cooperation in this program. So we sent letters home to the parents saying, if this happens, if your student does this, this is going to happen. And one of the comments, the parents had to sign this to make sure they got it, kids had to bring it back to school. One of the parents wrote on there some comment about, I hope this will not bring any negative discipline upon my son. And it was like, wait a minute, you know, what's going on? You know, you have to support us. We can't do anything if you say we're full of baloney and we aren't doing our job when we know we are. You have to support us and say, okay, you have to take a disciplinary action. If my kid deserves that, I have to take your word for it. And I was not getting that support, even to the place where if somebody had a complaint about me, about my teaching, I didn't hear about it. My principal heard about it, or my superintendent heard about it. They did not confront me with that problem, so I did not have the chance to defend myself as to why I was doing something. And that, I mean, it went from Christmas time to the next fall before I heard a comment that I had heard through my principal, my department chairman, and my superintendent about the problem. And this lady said, told me about it the next fall and said, well, I've been trying to get a hold of you all the rest of the spring. And it was like, I'm sorry, you know. And it really bothers me that way.
Yes. Excuse me. Where? Oh, up here. Come on. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I have a very global, literally, kind of statement to make. And if there's any reactions, I'd be interested.
Come.
I'm not a teacher. I'm going into the ordained ministry, and so I think I have a stake in education. And certainly Christian education in the church, we could start, if we had labeled the forum as such, we could have people talking about that with as much vehemence and interest as we have. But Tolstoy, in the book War and Peace, wrote about St. Petersburg just before it was about to be destroyed, that there was a great fervent activity, that people were doing all sorts of things with an extra measure of gaiety and frivolity and a kind of general absorption in material things before the destruction. And Sojourner's Magazine, which drew the parallel to contemporary Western society, this kind of feverish consumerism with a sense of impending destruction. And that's a very strong way of putting it, but let's keep it at that for now. The parents can do that. The kids, when all they've got to look forward to is downward mobility, the age of austerity, the end of the American dream of progress, the end of the idea of opportunity, what is there to, what is there to do?
I don't think the kids see a glimmer of that.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's true in the spirit.
I disagree.
Well, but you've already said that you're a very unusual school district.
Yeah, I know, but
not that.
Kids will pick it up by third grade.
No.
Not mine.
I just had a couple of things. One is that I think a lot of kids when they're living in the school that I teach, which is in a suburban area, really are deluded in terms of what they're going to be able to do. I mean, the parents have got money real fast, and they think they're going to be able to get money real fast, and they don't think about, you know, how it's going to happen, even if they can't read. And the other thing that I don't think anybody said, and I just want to say that I think that we all probably realize that there are teachers that are bad in the system. And I'm not sure the percentage, but I would guess it would be at least 25%. And it's very difficult for systems to get rid of them. It's not like business. It's not like other areas. You have to go to court, and it's real messy, and I've had to testify in those situations, and it's not pleasant, and it's hard.
Is it fair to ask a question now about what this whole discussion has to do with Holden? Or the faith?
I think that I consider myself a child advocate, and I have taken some classes in maternal and child health, and one of the leading professors that I had, who I respect very much, said that as a society, we are not a child-supporting society. A lot of people are deciding not to have children. Our society is not set up for having children. We have homes with lovely little glass things all over. A high standard of living with lovely, you know, lovely things that are not conducive to the recklessness of a child that they must go through as they mature. And I think Holden has a lot to say to it in reducing our lifestyle and not buying all, acquiring all these things, which require a lot of plain old upkeep, let alone money to buy them, and a lot of energy going into that whole process. And I think, I for one, am considering that real seriously.
Larry?
Mine is related to that. This is modification of Eric's statement. A lot of the, it seems to me that a lot of the difficulties that show up in the school system might be phrased as exemplifying lack of community. And I think a lot of sort of middle American society, at least, has been, we have a psychologist who works in McLean, Virginia, who works with suburban families all the time. He calls the people that he works with people who have portable selves. Their relationships to other people do not have depth nor endurance. There's no longevity there. There's no sense of attachment to a place and a time over the long haul. And they're portable, and they're going to be moving around or up and down or something, and so they gear themselves accordingly. And without that sense of community that exemplifies, or Philip Slater called it, what American society is bent on is the pursuit of loneliness. Mm-hmm. You know, when kids can have are old enough to have a telephone, they have one in their room. There's another radio, not one radio for the house, but one radio for the kids' room, as well as another one in another room, or even a television set or a stereo. And no necessary human interdependence. And when there isn't community, then what we do is we take recourse to structure and to law and to function and to assignment. Then you do this by contractual arrangement, and you do that by contractual arrangement. I just think that shows up all over the place. So parents take teachers to court if such and such, which has been specified by contract, isn't happening. And the contract then becomes the substitute for community. When you ask what is Holden have to say to that, it's a different way of caring for a whole set of relationships and structuring them here than it is in most, quote, community.
Please. Yes.
I wanted to lay out a very grim scenario, which would be very unencouraging for all of us who wish to stay in prison, and it is simply this. I think we're going through a major change involving electronic communications and the use of computers. And one of the things I guess I understand is happening in various places, and I think will happen more and more for people who have the money to buy it, is simply an educational service that you subscribe to, where you can tap into the best libraries in the country and become educated through the use of a computer in your home. More and more people are willing to spend $500 to $1,000 for their own home computer. Anybody who's willing to spend $10 a month for cable television would certainly be willing to spend $10 a month for an additional educational service, which would tap into that television. And I perceive, and almost I would predict, that within the next 25 years or so, in places of fairly high population concentration, the public school will become more and more for the very poor and less involved in the major part of the community. Almost no social building left, because many parents will exercise their option to educate their children. There will be programs available commercially which will meet the legal requirements for that, that you can buy. And parents will do this. The technology is just about there, and it's becoming cheap enough, or will become cheap enough, that this will happen. Now, I'm 32 and have another 29 years to retirement.
And can I say something positive about education?
Sure.
And I'm looking for a place where that won't happen for another 29 years.
Okay. Go ahead. Come on.
Please. When I went to school, something like 20% or maybe 25% of the students aspired to go on to college. Today, something like 80% or 90% are now going to college. So the statistics that they keep quoting about how the quality of the student is dropping and dropping, if you would compare the top 20% today with the 20% that went to college when I did, you would find that we have phenomenally well-educated students. We have more PhDs, more master's degrees, better educated people, and it's unbelievable. But what we are trying to do is to compare two different kinds of statistics. We're trying to say that all the students ought to be like the top 20% were 30, 40 years ago. And I think we've gotten mixed up on that, and we are not going to educate all the students to be top-level PhDs.
Okay, over here. Holden shouts a loud yes, I think. From what I have experienced in the lives of others who have been touched by it, and already what I'm experiencing here, too, in the midst of a world that is shouting an awful lot of no's. If I might borrow an Elmer Witt line, we are living in a world that's drawing the lines here, there, and yonder. Straight lines, hard lines. You can see that. Perhaps everything we have talked about tonight about education is symptomatic of whatever and however you want to describe what is really eating the heart and soul of this great country, end quote. Holden shouts a loud yes to a proper sense of community, I think. It does not reduce lifestyle so much as it seems to me, raises it immensely to a much more qualitative level. What we're really talking about is being salt in a world right now which is extremely consumer-oriented. I hear this kind of, you see it. I deal with the people in my parish. Their biggest worry is, when are they going to get Social Security check in? You and I are, we're fighting those same kind of struggles. What are we going to do with those things? How, I'm wondering how many, and we don't have time to go into it now. Obviously, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg. How many of you are looking for another job because you can't make it on what you're living? I missed the first part. It may well be that you might be looking in those directions. That was a little bit behind my why do you want to teach question earlier. I still think there is a loud yes that I hear and I'm experiencing here. And I guess, George C. Scott was in a movie, The Hospital. His last line, he could have left the hospital. It was a disaster. Could have escaped and done everything he wanted to do out in some unique situation, but he turned to go back in and he said it was like peeing in the wind. I sense that that's what a lot of you teachers have experienced in a way. And yet you're there, still yelling yes and still going at it. And that's what I've always appreciated in that kind of yes.
We have about a minute.
I was just going to respond to what Holden has to do with all this. And I think that it really does have a lot to do with it in your attitude. Holden is supposed, Holden teaches us to be practical, maybe, and how we don't know what the future is going to hold for education. It's a path untrodden. And I think that all we can do is try to be practical about the things that we see coming. And people are talking about community, but we don't know how to do that, and maybe that's what we should be talking about, is how to create more of a community, maybe by breaking down the huge, humongous schools. And that kind of thing.
And I surely would hope that our congregations would become more community, so they are bearing one another's burdens in those places too. Not only here, that you've got to come here to get it, but that's being transported to the places where that community can live and be concerned as we tried to be tonight about this issue, public education, right smack where you are, and supporting the teachers that are there. Why does it have to be only the ones from your school? Why can't it be the community of faith that is concerned about, indeed, slowly maybe, changing that system, changing at least the kind of help that is there, that is available to you? I would hope that would be possible.
Two quick comments, Elmer. One would be Holden is famous for dialogue, and certainly there is a need for closer dialogue with teachers and parents. In some way or another, that's going to happen. But secondly, to follow up on your homily of tonight, and that's not to fall for any sort of quickie type of a solution, because the problem is extremely complex. And I'm afraid that there are some folks out there running for public office who may try and lay on all of us a quickie kind of solution.
Well, I promise 10 o'clock. I'm grateful for all your participation. You want to stick around and chat more? You surely may. Thank you very much.